Construction meets the world's most popular board game in new Monopoly Construction Edition. Amass or possibly lose great fortunes. Every space on the board is packed with both iconic construction brands and incredible infrastructure projects in this new exciting edition of Monopoly. You'll need to make smart decisions to come out on top. Have you got what it takes to succeed in the world of construction? Search Construction Monopoly to order now.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of Reconstruction, hosted by me, David Taylor, from the Construction Index magazine, and my colleague Phil Bishop, editor of our daily online news service at theconstructionindex.co.uk. Good morning, Phil. How's things?
Morning, David. All good. How are things with you?
Very well, thanks, Phil. I think you've got quite a light-hearted story to kick things off this week, haven't you, Phil?
Well, I was very taken by something that JCB's PR machine sent through. There's a family called The Boots who, between them, 27 members of the Boot family have worked for JCB over the past 75 years, which JCB's been going, together clocking up 600 years of service. It's an extraordinary story. The reason why they're putting it's all part of JCB's 75th anniversary.
JCB is quite big on anniversaries, isn't it? It likes to celebrate things whenever the clock ticks round. Yeah, they send out a notice. Yeah, they're quite good at that sort of thing.
Well, I'm never sure whether it's contrived or absolutely genuine. The fact that the company JCB was started by Joe Bamford on the same day that his son Anthony Bamford, now Lord Bamford, was born. But they always managed to say that if it's the company's anniversary, it's also
his birthday,
Lord Bamford's birthday. So 23rd of October is Lord Bamford's 75th birthday and also the 75th anniversary of the company, they say. I want to focus on this family, the Boots, who it's just a wonderful story of a company growing with, you know, its heritage along with the family. The patriarch Bill Boot joined in 1949, just 4 years after the company began, and his wife Lucy worked in the canteen, and 9 of their 10 children went on to work for JCB, followed in years to come by grandchildren and great-grandchildren, making 27 all in all over the past 75 years. And there are 11 of them still at the family. And got a photo of some of them, some of the family and some of the photos from the ages in the Digger blog section of the Construction Index website.
It's a very entertaining story.
It's remarkable, I think. I'd be interested to know what other companies can claim that family link. And of course, JCB is a family business, so it's all good.
Yes,
you know, families are strongly represented within the workforce.
But they do, as I mentioned, their liking for anniversaries. But they also often trot out a story like this about their employees and you know, people who have been there for decades working faithfully, man and boy sort of thing. And it struck me, following our conversation last week when we talked about great length about employee ownership and these new EOT, these employee ownership trusts, that this is a completely different sort of model of employment and the relationship between employer and employee. JCB is, in many ways, a very old-fashioned firm. I mean, it's like enlightened feudalism, I think, in a way, because they have these families who live locally, who are part of JCB. They're sort of rooted in the history of the company. And I don't know how many other companies certainly in the construction sector can actually demonstrate the same sort of family tradition that JCB can. It's one of its big selling points, I suppose, that it's a family-run business that employs families.
I think there's one that goes further. I mean, it's while third generation Bamfords are involved in the company, it's very much owned and run by Lord Bamford at the moment.
Yes.
Whereas if you look at the Liebherr family, by contrast, the German family,
yes, the German family,
just registered, they've now got several of the third generation running the company. I remember having a conversation with a man who ran an American man who ran a New York Stock Exchange listed American crane manufacturer, who was saying much better to work for a Wall Street company where you get properly, you can get rich along with the company and so on. Much rather do that than and make shareholders wealthy than make German billionaires in tax exile in Switzerland, make them even richer. And it was quite sort of, rah-rah capitalism and doing down the family model when he was representing that particular company. And then in later years, he joined said German family.
Oh, did he?
And I said to him, how's it going making Swiss billionaire tax exiles even richer? And he said, do you know what? It is the most benevolent company you could imagine. They're fabulous to work for. It's not at all like that, and was completely won over to the family ownership model. It always strikes me, certainly with Liebherr, maybe same as JCB, the pride that employees have working for that company and long-serving employees is like no other company I've ever encountered in any industry.
Yeah, I think that obviously they must be doing something right if they have people who've worked there from, for decades and whose family have followed in their footsteps. Clearly that wouldn't happen if the company was a bad employer and treated its employees badly. We've talked in the past about Glassdoor, this online thing where you can go
employee rating website.
Yeah, exactly, yes. which we should point out, we always do when we bring it up, that you must take these reviews with a pinch of salt. But it's interesting to see what people are saying about JCB, because existing employees and people who have worked there in the past and no longer do, they say it's a great place to work. They say that the remuneration is very competitive, so they're paid well, and they say there's a great sense of camaraderie there. This seems to be a theme. But the other thing, the criticism, the main criticism of JCB, is that it's very old school. Which, in a way, I suppose, is a mixed blessing. That must be part of its secret, that it is old school. But they talk about, it's old school tie and it's a bit cliquey and their business philosophy is antiquated. Some people are quite outspoken about it, but it does crop up time and time again. But as an employer, I suppose once you're with JCB, you're part of the family, and there must be a sense of belonging there, because that seems to shine through in all this. I mean, a few people have said that, when there's a downturn, there's no sentimentality. If they're employing too many people, they'll lay them off, But you've got to be, if you're in business, you've got to be a bit ruthless, I suppose. But I still think as an employer, an old-fashioned employer, perhaps, JCB probably has a few lessons to teach some other people in the industry. So, I think that was quite a good story. I quite like reading that one.
Another thing that's been in the news this week, which has hit the national press, is a planning row in Walton-on-Thames, well-heeled Surrey town. This is a developer called Guild Living, who are part of, a legal in general, later living business. They haven't built anything yet, as far as I can tell, but they've got plans for, four developments around the place of retirement complexes. These sort of, they're not old people's homes, they're independent living flats.
No, later living is a sort of a buzz phrase which I've only recently become aware of, really. It's a euphemism, really, for an old people's home, isn't it?
But the point is, it's not a home in terms of, you don't have your own front door. You still have your own place, and there are various different models as to whether you actually buy it or rent the place that you live in. But there is a sort of a concierge / nursing service, if that's what you need, on site.
Yeah.
And there are communal facilities. Often it's like, swimming pool and beauty parlour and all these sort of things. It's kind of like a service department for older people. And it always amuses me that a lot of these places are for over 55s, they say. And it's a bit like...
That's me and you, Phil.
But it's a bit like, you know, Just 17 magazine was always read by 13-year-olds rather than 17-year-olds, because 17-year-olds are far too old for Just 17. So you always pitch the age from what's to aspire to that. So people who are 75 or 80 will go, oh, yes, I'm over 55 now, I might look at this. Whereas no one at the age of 55, I don't think, is really going to suddenly start, you know, looking to buy a later living complex.
What's the story here in Elmbridge?
Yes, but essentially, Elmbridge is the local authority. Guild Living have applied for planning permission to put up £100 million development of I can't remember how many flats it is. Essentially, it's been turned down, even before the planning meeting. The planning officer's report was made public or was published online recommending the application was turned down, which prompted Legal & General's PR machine to go into overdrive, getting all sorts of people to quote to cry out about it. The issue is, as far as they're concerned, is that within the planning officer's report, apart from all kinds of concerns about the scale of the development, they use this phrase of lacking vitality.
This was the justification for turning down the application, was it?
No, it wasn't. That's the point. But this is the justification for Legal & General getting lots and lots of headlines about saying they say that the local authority is being ageist. They think that old people lack vitality. And it's suggesting that it's a slur on every old person in the country for lacking vitality, rather than the suggestion it might be more to do with economic vitality and its economic contribution to the town.
I'd imagine that old people, people who would be moving into a later living development like this, would have quite a lot of disposable income, actually. I can't imagine that they would be economically lacking vitality.
Well, I think Walton-on-Thames, in my impression of it, I don't know particularly well, my impression is there's not a lack of income in Walton-on-Thames.
I'm sure
there's poverty too there, but I think it's a fairly well-heeled place. I listened to the planning meeting where they were discussing the development, and it wasn't the councillors going, we don't want more old people. The councillors were saying, well, hang on, we've got all these later living facilities in the town already, which have surplus capacity. So we've already got capacity in the area.
So we don't need another one.
So we don't need more, at least not yet. And this development, it's huge, and there's not enough parking for it, and we don't think it's appropriate. If you're going to get a local authority is going to get hauled over the coals for turning down a later living development, then it seems to me that they should all equally get hauled over the coals for turning down absolutely anything, because everything you can say. I think Legal & General's argument is really based on, we're big, we've got money, how dare you disagree with us?
Yes, I get that impression.
They seem to have won the headline war in this one, Legal & General, but and I bet they appeal it, and you know what? I bet it ends up being built anyway, because these...
Do you think so?
They always seem...
Well, as you say, the story did make the national press, and of course, rather predictably, it was the Express that went to town, as it were, because you quote their headline on the front page. Was it in the front page of the Daily Express?
I don't think it was.
No, it probably wasn't the front page, was it? Furious council says it does not want OAPs living in town centre, which could only ever be in the Express, really. But that's a bit of a jaundiced interpretation, I think.
Talking of later living specialists, the big story that's broken is the proposed takeover of McCarthy and Stone. McCarthy and Stone are probably the daddy of the retirement later living builders. Yeah. And they've more recently moved into operating and running care or supported living developments as well. And the board has recommended shareholders accept a £630 million takeover bid from a US private equity company called Lone Star. Lone Star Real Estate taking them over if shareholders vote for it, which seems likely given the premium that's being offered and given the fact that the board are fully behind it.
Absolutely.
So they'll be no longer listed on the stock exchange. So that's an interesting move. And it does show the appetite. I mean, as I mentioned before, Legal & General have got two separate companies for later living developing retirement complexes and so on. And McCarthy and Stone going to a private equity house ownership. So it's a lot of appetite, a lot of big money being thrown into old people's accommodation.
I wonder if you know, the later living sector is on the rise and the student accommodation sector is on the wane, because of course at the moment with the COVID outbreak and the whole business of clusters of young students in expensive accommodation in our university towns, people are talking, aren't they, quite seriously of university education as we know it changing radically, and that there will be more online learning and that you won't have to actually go and live in a hall of residence or in a student flat somewhere away from home. You can do it all from home. So I wonder if people are thinking, well, retired people need somewhere to live. They need looking after. And that's not going to change. Maybe we should get into that sector instead.
But the sort of people who move into a McCarthy and Stone or a legal and general kind of service departments type development would probably not be satisfied with a 12-foot by 3-foot student bedsit.
No, that is true. Yeah, that is true. They can be quite swish, can't they, these things? But I've never heard of Lone Star, and I thought it was quite interesting that it was an American investor who were interested in McCarthy and Stone. I don't know how common that sort of takeover is, but I was quite surprised to see that. But I don't know much about McCarthy and Stone, apart from the fact, as you say, they are, you know, probably the biggest name in this particular sector. They have sort of divided up into, or somebody from the McCarthy family left and started up a rival business or something like that.
You're thinking of the sons.
Okay.
McCarthy and Stone, Mr. McCarthy, whatever his name. I think Spencer and Clinton McCarthy are his sons, and they set up Churchill Retirement Living. In much the same market, and I don't know whether they still own it or whether they've got venture capital behind them or what their funding model is. But I think, was there a falling out of McCarthy and Stone, or when they went public, maybe
possibly.
The founders might have moved on, but Churchill Retirement Living seems to be the certainly the McCarthy name or the flag of the McCarthy family, as that's where it now lies.
So basically the family can sell off the original business for a tidy profit and carry on running another family business under a different name. I'm speculating here.
Well, but if you float a business, you don't get a non-compete clause, I don't think, so you can do what you want, but you probably can't. You won't be able to use the brand name, I guess.
Sure.
But this is not even the same family, but I think it's the sons. They've started again doing what they know best. David, I remember a number of years ago in another life, you used to have a lot of fun on the back page of Construction News when it was a weekly newspaper that you could buy off the newsagent's stands.
That's true.
And you used to take great delight in ripping the mick out of the pomposity of acronyms and euphemisms.
Yes,
euphemisms
true.
Is the word I'm looking for.
I'm a bit more respectful these days.
And there's a new piece of jargon to me, or sort of new, that has occurred recently, a week or two ago. I mean, increasingly we talk about, but construction companies say that they're not the builder. In the olden days, they were the builder. And then they became grand and they became the contractor.
The contractor.
Fine. I understand what a contractor is. Now, these days, they're the partner, because contractor implies a sort of lord and master
hierarchical
and servant,
thing. Yes,
master
exactly.
Servant relationship. But they're no longer the contractor. They are the partner. Now, I had a press release, I'm sure you had it too. Interserve had won a contract to build a clinic of some kind or an extension at Chorley and South Ribble Hospital. And they described themselves in this job as the principal supply chain partner, which they then abbreviate to the PSCP. So, you're building an extension to your house, David, are you? Who's your PSCP on that job?
Well, I think there's scope here for some misunderstanding, not surprisingly, because it says nothing about whether or not they're actually building the thing. And also, you might find that that puts the architect's nose out of joint, because they might like to be the principal supply chain partner, seeing as they're sort of the first, you know, the first one in the queue, as it were. They go, the client goes to the architect. I don't know why this reluctance to admit that you build things, because we've spoken about this before. Do you remember when Carillion went under? We talked a lot about the fact that major contractors had started to reposition themselves not as contractors but as service providers, and actually started offering services which weren't construction because that wasn't so good for business.
But school meals and emptying the bins.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know whether or not that there's something, you know, the dirty word building affects your share price or what. I don't know. It seems strange that they
slight irony that Interserve was the most guilty of everything. I mean, it was perfectly respectably called, you know, Tilbury Douglas before it changed its name to Interserve because it didn't want to sound too construction-y. And it became the bin emptier in chief, the janitorial services, one of the top janitorial services.
Yes, it did, didn't it?
From the construction side, and now they're getting rid of all of that, and they are becoming a pure construction company, pretty much once again.
But it still feels as if they're reluctant to admit it.
Yes, we're a partner. We're not a builder. We're a partner.
No, exactly. Well, I wonder how people further down the supply chain would describe themselves. I mean, if they're the principal supply chain partner, there must be people saying, well, we must be the secondary supply chain partner then. And then there's the tertiary and the...
Okay, so subcontractors are no longer subcontractors. They're now junior supply chain partners.
Yeah, excellent. It sounds much better, doesn't it?
Right,
oh, yeah.
Well, JCB may be celebrating its 75th anniversary, but we are celebrating here at Reconstruction our 9-month anniversary.
So hooray!
We are overdue for something, and we've done 35 of these podcasts now. And if you want to hear what we've done before, it's all online at theconstructionindex.co.uk. There's a podcast tab there you can click on, or you can subscribe to this podcast at any of the usual podcast outlets, Spotify, Deezer, Apple, Google Podcasts, all of those sort of places. If you want to get in touch with us, talk to us at all, we are at podcast@theconstructionindex.co.uk. We welcome feedback, comments, chat, views, news, opinions, etc. And we will be back with you at roughly the same time next week, talking about something completely different, we hope. So cheerio.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Reconstruction, the podcast from the Construction Index. To keep up to date with the latest construction news every day, visit theconstructionindex.co.uk.